Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I've got filmmaker Alec Lev with me. Hey, Alec.
How you doing?
Good. All right, so Alec and I just finished recording a podcast all about his film, What?, which you can learn about. Actually, you can watch it right now if you go to thewhatmovie.com. It's on VOD. It cleaned up three awards at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival last year, including Best Director for Alec, Best Actor in a Lead Role for John Masseur, and it won the Audience Award for Best Feature Film. So if you want to see a super entertaining film, go watch Alec's film, What? With a question mark. But just go to thewhatmovie.com to find out where to see it. But this podcast is about the four questions, which are favorite films of all time, an underrated film, an overrated film, and a lesser-known film for people to seek out. And I'm just going to shut up now and let Alec answer these questions because it's fun and it leads to fun debates when we have, you know, a margarita night with filmmakers who've done the podcast. And I can say, hey, you put The Dark Knight in your top three. This person put Dark Knight as overrated. Go at it. No, I'm just kidding. That's not the purpose of this. This is just to get some insight into you two.
Okay. Okay. So ask me one by one.
All right. So name a couple films that are your favorite films. I jokingly say limit three, but you can name with as many favorites as you need to. But
so I've been struggling over this one, man. You know, my friends and I, during the, you need something to do when you're in a pandemic. So I had, we did a big, everyone gave me the list of their top 20 movies. It was 10 of us. And we gave everything 1 point. It was too much to rank things. So every movie got 1 point. And I could say of that gang of dudes who grew up in the 80s, Aliens won that. That got the most points. Just throwing that out there.
Right. For so me, James Cameron's Alien sequel.
Correct.
Aliens.
Correct. So for me, as I was thinking about this, certainly growing up, it was full on Star Wars, Indiana Jones, lots of Godfather watching at a way too young age. And so it'd be very easy for me to go with Empire Strikes Back and Raiders and Godfather 2. The movie that I made, What, is a little more on the smaller, subtle side, but my tastes are too big, splashy, Spielberg, Lucas, all of that. And so those are movies I watched 1,000 times. I saw Jurassic Park 10 times in the theater. If I'm trying to figure out now what's my favorite, if I based on what I watch the most, that I do have three and then a fourth with an asterisk. We'll do the asterisk first. The asterisk is Field of Dreams, but that's more about me. My father died when I was young. Baseball was our thing. This movie was our thing. And so I watched that every year for that reason. And it's wonderful. But the three movies would have to be Lawrence of Arabia, 2001, and Buster Keaton's The General. Those are movies that I all see at least once a year, usually in the theater here in Los Angeles. There's two great theaters, the Egyptian and the Arrow, that show older films. And so I go and see each one of those at least once a year.
Wonderful. And I have to say, I've always found Lawrence of Arabia to be timeless and enjoyable. I know the young folk might look at an epic, a film that's known to be an epic as they might approach it as homework, but it's actually not. It's incredibly engaging from start to finish.
It is. And like 2001, and not unlike The General, but more like 2001, which is a whole, I guess it's another world. You just need to decide that you're in the movie theater for a different reason than you are for most other movies. You're not there for, what is this story this character is going to get into? What are all the things that are going to happen? I hope it wraps up at the end. That's not why you're there to watch Lawrence in 2001. You're there because you never want to leave. You're there to just say, I'm going to let this all fill my eyes and my ears for many, many hours. Not unlike you might go to an orchestra playing something. There are stories. Lawrence has more of a story than 2001. I would say more of a character-driven story than 2001. But still, you got to just want to stare at the desert. You got to want to see camels crossing a desert. And if you let yourself go, and decide that's why I'm here, just to take it in, not to get to the next thing, I think you'll love it. Audiences always laugh, especially the audiences I see it with, who are all sort of very much in the know. At the end of the opening credits, it says, "And introducing Peter O'Toole." It was his second movie that they gave him this three and a half hour, one of the largest roles in the history of film. And I mean, he just destroys, right? It's just one of the greatest performances you've ever seen by a human.
Yeah, and in fact, he's another person, we'll never be able to put our finger on it, but his face belongs on a 70mm massive screen CinemaScope. Just, he is a movie star.
Oh my God. His eyes, his hair, dictionary, his in the encyclopedia. Voice. Oh my God.
Yeah, boy. Like your lead actor in what? Just somebody whose face belongs on the screen. It's something that is hard to define.
Absolutely.
And I want to add that I jumped in on Lawrence because I hear it less often, but 2001's in my top three. We got a 33% overlap now because oh my God, that is just.
Oh, I'm in deep, as I get about every 5 years, I'm back in deep Kubrick dive. There's a great, the Stanley Kubrick Appreciation Society has a podcast called Kubrick's World or something. And they've just tried to find people who are still alive who've worked with him. And there's a 5-episode series just on 2001, on the 50th anniversary of 2001. And I'm just like, I can't get enough. Just keep talking to me. I just want to hear anything anyone has to say about that movie at any place in time.
And it's funny because I think about why I love it so much and always have. Because I think I first saw it, you know, when I was in like 11th grade or something, 10th grade. And, you know, one of the things I love about programming film festivals is getting to see indie films where it's closer to the artist's vision, because the process, the filmmaking process, there's a lot of compromise. I think it's natural, especially to get those big dollars. But somehow Kubrick made this film that is such a personal vision. I mean, I'm a huge fan of most of his work, and I think Dr. Strangelove I might actually enjoy more because I think it's the funniest thing ever done. But but the shit he does in 2001, it's just like he had a vision and he did it and nothing stood in the way.
I mean, reading the books on the making of it is endlessly fascinating because they literally had to invent, like they continue to do through Star Wars and in the sort of early days of the good special effects movies. They had to invent how to do all this stuff. They couldn't just have a spaceship flying through space because the light from the stars, the way they were doing light, would show through it. So essentially, as those ships are moving through space, each frame is a different black background where they had to erase the stars or not have those holes for those stars when the ship was over them. This took years, right? This movie took literally years to make. The technical process of it for me is as exciting as all of the storytelling, all of the philosophy, all of the theorizing that goes into it. And there aren't that many movies where that withholds so much. And that's what clearly drives people crazy, because you could definitely walk out of there going, what was any of that? Or you need to, again, let yourself go and trust that you're getting things, even when, wait, did that mean that? Well, maybe it meant that. Maybe it meant this other thing. Most movies aren't that complicated and or complex. And he just decided, I'm going to show you a certain amount of this and you're going to have to translate the rest of it. And good luck to you. And so, like any good work of art, I'm all for needing to learn things in order to enjoy it more. If you just look at The Last Supper, you just kind of look at it, you know absolutely zero about what's happening. I'm not really an art appreciation guy, but you'll appreciate some of it. But once you're told, hey, that's Jesus, well, that changes things. But you got to be told. You don't know that necessarily, and that's okay. I think that counts. And most movies, you don't need to be told anything. And I enjoy this one where the more you learn, the more you enjoy it.
Absolutely. And when I saw The Last Supper, I just thought, hey, that's a nice Passover Seder.
Sure.
What are you going to do? But your friend's having a meal.
Yeah.
All right. Well, question number two.
And the general, by the way.
Oh, and the general. Yeah. General. Actually, I apologize for not asking about it. Which one is that? You make me feel very ignorant about the silent era.
Yes. So Run, Don't Walk to see the general. The general is about the train. It's almost entirely on these moving trains, and I can't even quite do it justice, but it's just exquisite. It is comedy taken to dramatic heights as never been done, certainly had never been done at that point. But you have this comedian who, I mean, he was always great with his camera, but who just is out of nowhere, right? 19, whatever it was, 26, is just this filmmaker and just is knowing how to use the camera and use editing to tell a story that's beyond what he was doing in vaudeville for the first 20 years of his life. Just watch it and watch it in a huge crowd. You're 5 years old, you're 90 years old. People lose their minds over the daring do. I mean, now we have Tom Cruise. I mean, that's really, people ask me who's the Buster Keaton now. And it's not really any comedians. It's Tom Cruise. Cause there is something to knowing that an actor is really doing the incredible stunts that they're doing. It changes how you watch something. And, so as impressed as you are when Tom Cruise jumps out of or onto planes or buildings or whatever it is, watching Buster Keaton on these trains is something to see.
Absolutely. And I have to say, yeah, Keaton, Chaplin and Keaton are amazing. I had an undergrad film studies professor who I think devoted half the semester to Buster Keaton.
Good.
Because most of cinema comes from there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, question number two is a film that you think is underrated.
See, this was a tough one because, again, I'm just like I'm a simple guy. I just like big movies where things blow up. I hate to stick in the Tom Cruise thing because I said on the earlier podcast, I produce a podcast about Tom Cruise, and my role on that podcast is to tell the other two Tom Cruise fanatics that they're idiots. And that is my role. They should not be spending this much time talking about Tom Cruise. But along the way, I saw American Made. And whether you hate Tom Cruise or love Tom Cruise, this is one to watch. I think one of his best performances where he is shaken from his confidence from minute one. He doesn't even have that much. He doesn't quite play that same character, the confident guy who gets thrown off. He's just, it's a based on a true story about this drug running plot. And, so small movie with Tom Cruise that I would say is worth seeing. And again, I know in the history of motion pictures that I choose this one is maybe a sin, but I'm going for it.
No, I'm glad you did. Also, directed by Doug Liman.
Correct.
Who I think is furiously underrated.
Correct. Yes. And a great story of how they made this movie, over the course of years, literally just writing things as they're doing it, and very sort of scrappy story writing between the two of them. But wild, crazy movie. And you can listen to the Meeting Tom Cruise podcast to learn more.
As people should. All right. Well, question number three is a film that's overrated.
And Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Anything. I tried. I did try, everyone. I tried. I watched all 10 hours. I did. Now, I've never read the book, so I don't know. Maybe that was supposed to be something. But I was impressed of how bored I was for 10 straight hours. And it never broke. I never got into it. From the 8-minute crawl at the beginning, the 8 minutes of title cards telling me things that they couldn't tell in the ensuing 10 hours. I had to sit through that. I had to read the movie for a while. And then it's a guy who wants to put a ring somewhere, and then he goes and he puts the ring in that place. I don't know.
It's I respect that. And I respect, and you went back every year and watched the next one, even though you weren't enjoying them. Did you get all the way through all 10 hours?
All 10 hours of the Lord of the Rings. I know there was also a Hobbit situation. I did not see those. That was enough. Ready? No. I did it. I did it. I mean, in the third movie, folks, they like are, I don't remember anything, but they were really screwed. They couldn't get to the place with the thing, but they were, they just so happened to be near an army of the dead that owed them a favor. That seems to be my memory of the storytelling in the one that won Best Picture. And so I was like, oh, can I have an army of the dead that owes me something anytime I need help? It just felt...
That is true. Aragorn walked in there and said, hey, you owe my dad, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
So I didn't make that up. It's something like that. So again, that said, once a movie makes $1 billion and wins Best Picture, like, what's the point of getting too far into it? But I would say... those movies. That was an easier one.
Those weren't for you. I mean, I enjoyed them, but it's funny. I was told I never read the books. I read The Hobbit as a kid. And I said to my hardcore fantasy sci-fi friends, I'm like, well, should I read the books? And they said, oh, don't go near those books. Those books, there's like, there'll be like 20 pages in a row of just naming who gave birth to whom. It's like the Bible, the Bible. Of like, like the genealogy of the family of Aragorn or whatever. And it's like, like, no, trust me, like, stay away. So I've been warned off the books, even though I kind of enjoyed them. I mean, I enjoyed those films, but I love it when that's one of the fun things about Overrated is it does.
Yeah.
I don't mind at all that you think those are overrated. I think, I think it's legit too, especially in retrospect, especially when,
I did it in current
and showed that you can, I got to admit, we watched Game of Thrones and then we've, went to Lord of the Rings and I was like, wow, this already feels dated. And it was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And we got a 14-year-old and I could not get her into Lord of the Rings. I was like, yeah, you are. She's into like spectacle and big stuff. I'm like, this will have some battles that, that you really will dig. And she's like, can we turn this off? And I'm like, sure.
Yeah. I'm not even going to try with my kid.
Although Legolas was really cute. That said, there was some beefcake for her. But anyway.
Okay.
Last question. It's a fun one. It's just something lesser known that people should seek out.
So I'm going to go ahead and because when you're listening to me, what I want you to do is go watch my silent film. I'm going to talk about another silent film, which is The Cameraman. Now, all Buster Keaton movies are lesser known because he is a lesser known person. That said, you know, the general is on AFI's, I think it's like the number 8 greatest movie of all time or something like that. It doesn't mean people have seen it. It is more well known. The Cameraman, slightly lesser known, Cameraman 1920, 7 or 8 or so. Buster Keaton, made his films. Basically, Buster Keaton is famous. He had 50 years of work, but 10 years of real productivity where he's making, 17 short films, I think, and 10 features in 10 years, right? And there's really not quite a dud among them. They're all amazing for one reason or another. He loses control, basically, and I believe it's, I'm bad with the history. I think MGM basically sort of takes control of his work. And The Cameraman is the last one that is clearly a Buster Keaton movie that he has his imprint on. In fact, he went to go shoot a lot of it in New York. Just he put a lot of the plot in the big city in New York just so he could be away from the studio where they just literally physically wouldn't be there to bother him. And so it is an amazing, beautiful, beautiful love story. Some incredible camera work, great action scenes, super funny, always an audience favorite. And in fact, MGM would go on for decades to use it to show their, I want to say editors, I think, as an example of editing because he is a cameraman in it. So it's also very meta and there's a lot of great, trippy, filmmaking within the filmmaking, that's worth seeing. So go see The Cameraman.
Yeah, which people think the meta film within a film stuff is like something that people whipped up in the 70s, but no.
Oh, no. And I mean,
pioneers of film were doing
it. Oh, sure. A movie, Sherlock Jr. is very famous for where he walks up onto the screen and starts interacting with it, which is what Woody Allen based one of his movies on. So no, but Buster was very, very meta from the beginning, thinking about film within film and what is film. See The Cameraman.
Absolutely. Excellent. Now here's a funny personal question. which if you demand I edit, I will edit.
Oh, okay.
But I recall at the Q&A, you said you named your son Chaplin.
True.
And you, at the Q&A Sherman Oaks Film Festival, and did you name anybody Keaton or Buster? Got a pet?
So no. The theory on that was basically Keaton was certainly in the offing. Someone else, another friend of ours, suggested Chaplin, which immediately made us go, oh, what about Keaton? But it was really, there were two things that stopped it from being Keaton. One, I wasn't yet the vice president of the International Buster Keaton Society, but Buster was very much sort of everywhere in our lives. And like, then for the kid to be Keaton, like, is enough already. Enough of that. There's also the sound of the names, though. Keaton has that swallowed Keaton. You can't yell Keaton across the house. Chaplin is nice and open. We like the sound of that a little better. And so we went with Chaplin.
Excellent. All right. I just figured I'd ask.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we already mentioned your film. Thank you for answering those questions. Now people have some stuff to go watch, and clearly your appreciation. It's funny because the Kubrick stuff doesn't necessarily come through whatmovie.com. But I will say that now that I know you're a fan of the Kubrick, I bet when I watch What Again, I'll see some things.
I mean, the only thing I'll say is that it was definitely not really in my mind. Kubrick does use the center of the screen a lot rather than the left and right thirds. And that's kind of a comedy thing often. It's a Wes Anderson thing, sort of putting your character's dead center screen looking at the camera. Kubrick does likes things to be very, very clean and neat. And so do I. My house, my movies, the stage, everything, I'm that way. So he has a lot of characters sort of dead center screen, which so does What, kind of for a different reason. But also, 2001 is the greatest silent film since the silent film era. It has, I believe, a total of 20 minutes of dialogue within the 2.5, 2.75 hours running time. And even that dialogue sort of famously isn't telling you that much. So it's about as close to a silent film as there's been since there were silent films. So there's a little connection there.
For sure. And I'll just add that I was always a fan of this British actor, Leonard Rossiter, who is actually a comic actor who's in 2001 on one of the moon stations at the station that's slowly turning. And there's a dialogue scene between he and I believe the astronaut Dave, but he has a really wide shot and just lets this little conversation happen, you know, in a small portion in the center of the screen in this big environment, which I think not that your work was a tribute to that, but it's a similar vibe of showing a bigger picture, showing us an environment with people in it instead of just two mouths talking.
Right. And I don't like, it's definitely true that I don't like messiness, and you know, when I directed theater, a lot of it's just like a stage and chairs. I don't like a lot of things around. And it was the same thing with What. It's very sparse and it sort of fits the mood, and much of Kubrick is that way also. There's not a prop out of place in a Kubrick film. It's all very, very clean and neat. Even amongst whatever violence is going on. And so that's in there somewhere, but maybe not top of mind for this one.
Definitely not. All right. Well, thank you again. As I said, if people just listen to Alex's list, watch his film, the whatmovie.com came out a couple days ago. If all the timing works out and it's on VOD, you should support it. It's a wonderful, completely independent film that is completely entertaining. So go to the whatmovie.com and watch it. And I guess now I will do my closing spiel, which is thank you for listening to the Discover Indie Film podcast. Give it 5 stars, like and subscribe, whatever makes you happy, but be a nice person. You know, it doesn't actually cost money to click that 5th star. You know what I'm saying? And if you want to learn more about this podcast and the TV series that was born out of it, go to discoverindiefilm.com, and on social media, it's at DIFWINS. I believe I mentioned in the intro that Alex's film What won 3 awards at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival last November. We hold that film festival every November. Amusingly, we chose November because there's a massive street fair in Sherman Oaks 2 weeks before the festival every year for us to promote at. And for 2 years in a row, COVID made that sucker get canceled because 100,000 people on Ventura Boulevard, not what you want during a pandemic. But crossing my fingers, we'll be back. But we were back in the theater last year, and we got to show What on Screen, which was wonderful. So if you want to learn more about the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, go to ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. And there is a sister festival in the summer every June. That's Film Invasion Los Angeles, and you can learn about it at FilmInvasionLA.com, and it's at FilmInvasionLA on social media. And thank you, Alec Lev.
Thank you.
Great list. You know, we're two white guys around the same age, so it makes sense we like the same movies, grew up on the same stuff. But what are you going to do? We can't change who we are.
Same haircut, too.
Same haircut. Same we do. I actually just trimmed mine. You know, I was getting out of control. All right. Well, thank you, Alec.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.